Hello, America and the world. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your guest host, Luke McGrath. We are behind the lines of socialism, my friends, and Radio Free Market is the voice of free people and free markets. Our topic today is, how far are we from a truly free market? And our guest is Dr. Sean Gabb. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be on.
Excellent. I'll tell you just a little bit about Dr. Gabb. He is the director of the Libertarian Alliance, which is a British free market and civil liberties think tank that he joined back in 1979. He graduated in history from the University of York in 1982, and in 1998 he gained a PhD in political and intellectual history from the University of Middlesex. In 2006, he became the director of the Libertarian Alliance. Here in the U.S., the presidential election is in full swing, and if you were to listen to the media, we have two camps pitted against one another. You have Obama and the progressive liberals on the left, and then on the right, you have Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, who represent the alternative choice of conservatism and free markets. But do you think this is at all accurate, Sean? Are these factions really as different as they're made out to be?
Well, there are two answers to that one, Luke. There's the cop-out answer, which is, I am a foreigner. I'm not an American. I don't live in America. I take very little interest in American affairs. I don't follow the news stories from America. And so I am completely unqualified to comment on the free market or socialist credentials of any of the particular candidates. However, if I may be rather general, and if I may extrapolate from my own British experience of the Conservative Party and the Labour parties, which are supposed to represent free market and socialist principles, what I would say is that the American election is probably very much of a Punch and Judy show in which people shout at each other, jump up and down. You have the omnipresent drum majorettes. And when the votes are counted, you will get someone who is just like the one before. He may have a darker face or a lighter face. He may come from a different state, but there seems to be no great difference in the policies pursued. And this would bring me to a further observation, which is a personal observation, but I'm quite sure that many other libertarians have come to the same conclusion, which is this. When I got involved in libertarian politics back in the 1970s, I had in my mind the idea that I lived in what was essentially a free market democracy. All we needed to do was to roll back the frontiers of the state a little bit, bring the trade unions under control, do something about inflation, have some cuts in government spending, and we would be back to what could reasonably be described as a free market society. 30 years later, I do not believe that for a moment. I like to think that if it had been put to me in those terms when I was 17, I would have rejected it, but I'm not so sure. All I can say is that we do not live in Britain or America or in Western Europe in anything remotely approaching a free market society.
What do you think is a better term for the economic system then that predominates today? Do you think something like corporatism, perhaps?
Yes, I think so. I know that some people use the rather emotive phrase fascism, which is technically correct, I suppose, insofar as the means of production are formally in private hands, but there is so much merging at the top of the economic and political, there's so much merging at the top of the economic and the political captains of society that you could regard it as a cleaned up, softer, fairer sharing version of Italian fascism. But I think corporatism is a nice, relatively neutral descriptive term, yes.
So you don't think that, you don't consider the free market as just basically today's economic system minus the regulatory and welfare state?
No, I don't. Yes, I know that you have the phrase, Tesco minus the state, or in American terms, Walmart minus the state, that if we sweep away the welfareism and if we sweep away the more overt regulations on enterprise, then we would move straight into something like a free market society. But that really is not the case. What we have is an all-pervasive structure of control, or rather all-pervasive structures of control, which mean that wealth is systematically vacuumed up from those who produce into the hands of those who consume. And this is done not only by the not only by those measures which all libertarians would immediately recognize and agree on, heavy taxation, regulatory structures, and so on. It is the very structures of our law and our general expectations of what economic activity should look like. Let me be a little more particular in this. We have the state funding or the state underwriting of infrastructure projects. Now, the effect of these road networks, railway networks, telephone and internet networks, foreign trade networks, you name it, the effect of these is to raise the maximum scale of efficient production. If I could give you another example, 150 years ago, the British state did not build the railway network in this country. The state, however, did enable the construction of the railway network through grants of compulsory purchase and through various other kinds of assistance. Now, what this did was to create a national market. And the same thing happened in the United States rather later in the century. A national market which made it suddenly much more efficient to increase the scale of production. Economies of scale became possible in many enterprises which would not otherwise have been possible. Now, what this did was to create an illusion of efficiency. What these enlarged companies were doing effectively was to externalize many of their costs. And it may well have been, and it may well still be, that if an enterprise were required to pay its full costs of operation, it would hit diseconomies of scale very quickly.
So you don't think then that we that when some people come to the defense of corporations, for example, or defend the profits that they're making, that's a wise strategy or wise move then, because they're not earning these profits in a truly free market?
Yes. I would add a reservation to this. I'm not saying that we live in some softer version of the Soviet Union. We are not living in anything like a socialist society. And there is no doubt that these corporations, Microsoft, Tesco, Walmart, IBM, you name them, that these big corporations create an enormous amount of wealth. They have enriched our lives. And they have done many very good things. We are the most fortunate people who have ever been alive. There is a continuous flood of wonderful new things which extend our lives and which enrich our lives. And so, you cannot say that I am some kind of socialist whining about the how big business is somehow no different from the Soviet Union. No, it is different from the Soviet Union. It is much more creative, and these facts must at all times be kept in mind and must, where appropriate, be celebrated. At the same time, it is an extraordinarily corporatist kind of economic structure. When I say that things like infrastructure subsidies raise the maximum scale of production possible by socializing the costs of doing business, to this must be added that the minimum scale of production has also been shifted upwards. it is not possible for ordinary people to be respectably poor. Now, I remember having a discussion with a friend some years ago around a dinner table. What does libertarianism offer the poor? How can we sell libertarianism to the poor? And we found ourselves scratching our heads because what could libertarianism offer to a checkout assistant working for Tesco, or in your case, for Walmart? Lower taxes? Well, she earns so little that she doesn't actually pay any tax worth mentioning. Greater life opportunities, a greater range of things on which to spend her money. Well, yes, but she doesn't have that much money, and she would have trouble imagining that she'd be much better off under any other system. And we ended up just by saying, well, you know, there's some sort of trickle-down benefit. Of course, we were missing the most essential fact, which is that in a real free market society, that checkout assistant would have the option of not working as a checkout assistant in Tesco's. At the moment, we live in a country, and it's the same in America as in Britain, where a whole range of micro enterprises have been legislated or regulated out of existence. I'll give you an example of this. It is not tremendously difficult to look after other people's children. If for a man as well, though women are rather better at it on the whole, but if you've had a child of your own, looking after other people's children is really not that much harder. And yet, in Britain, if you want to work as a childminder to allow other people to go out to work or to get on with their lives, you must be registered with a state body called Ofsted. And Ofsted will impose a vast mass of regulatory compliance on you with which people below a certain level of intelligence cannot deal. And so, as far as someone of limited education is concerned, you cannot become a childminder. I'll give you another example in this country. Many, many years ago, when I was studying law, I decided to earn some money as a student. So I became a minicab driver, a taxi driver. I went down to the local minicab office, put £25 on the counter, and I was given a radio, one of those two-way radios. And I was given a number and sent out, and the deal was that I paid my rent money every week to the controller, and he would answer the telephones, and if I happened to be in the area, he would give me a particular job. I did this for a year, then when I no longer wanted to do it, I took my radio back and didn't pay any more rent. I needed special car insurance. It's called hire and reward insurance, which was about £20 a month in those days, and that was it. Nowadays, all taxi drivers are licensed. They are registered. And there are a limited number of licenses handed out, and I was told by an Oxford city councillor a few years ago that a taxi license in Oxford will sell for £60,000. Now, that is just to get the right to drive a taxi. There are then endless requirements about the age and the shape and the engine capacity of the car you drive, and a whole mass of politically correct regulations about the nature of conversation you can have with your passengers. And so again, an occupation which not that long ago was open to anyone with a driving license and a car has now been closed except to those with the ability to assemble a great deal of money up front and the ability to comply with the regulations. And the effect of this is not merely to drive up prices in things like childminding and taxi driving, but also to deliver an enlarged and docile workforce to large corporations. Let me give you another example which comes to mind. Again, a few years ago, I read this story in the newspapers. There is a do-it-yourself chain in Britain called Do-It-All. No, B&Q, forgive me, B&Q. Don't ask me what it stands for. It has a very large distribution warehouse in Bristol, and it employs a large number of people there to carry things about, And all of those workers are tagged. They're electronically tagged. And if one of them stops moving for 10 minutes, a message sounds off in his ear. Worker B527C, report to main office and explain yourself. Now, you might say as a libertarian, well, you know, I accept that that is a rather soul-destroying kind of job, but in a free market, no one is required to take such a job, and you, you know, by taking the job, you thereby consent to the employer's regulations. Now, that is what Roderick Long calls right conflationism, or Kevin Carson calls vulgar libertarianism. It is when you defend the practices and structures of actually existing capitalism as if they were the outcomes of a free market. The reason why B&Q is able to treat its workers so badly, and I think that is bad treatment, I won't bother arguing otherwise than it is, the reason why B&Q is able to treat its workers so badly is that those workers have had their range of alternative options artificially reduced by regulations, by taxes, which I believe have been designed to reduce their options. These are not accidental outcomes. These are deliberate steps to reduce the options of the working classes.
So it's essentially been a massive raising of the barriers to entry to various all sorts of occupations and then a crowding out of alternative social arrangements.
Yes, there is. And the overall effect of this, of enabling economies of scale which only exist because many of the costs have been socialized or externalized, and raising barriers to people in the lower reaches of enterprise, have been thoroughly corrupting and have produced the enormous and growing disparity of incomes between those at the top and those at the bottom. Now, again, I have no objection whatever to very large disparities of income, so long as they are earned on the market. It has never struck me as morally questionable that a footballer like David Beckham is able to earn millions upon millions of pounds for advertising underpants, or that a singer is able to earn huge amounts of money from one performance, or indeed that somebody who creates a new product is able to become enormously rich. But what we have increasingly is a system in which a relatively small class of well-connected people are able to earn fantastically large amounts of money, and millions of people in the middle, the lower, and the very lower ends of society are squeezed ever more downwards. That is not the outcome of a free market. That is the outcome of a highly corporatized economy, the effect of which and the intention of which is, as I said at the beginning, to vacuum wealth up from those who produce to those who consume.
So we really should be paying attention then, I guess, to the the context and the conditions under which markets arise today.
Yes, we should. Again, I've spoken to people who insist that the City of London is the highest manifestation of capitalism, and they wax very eloquent over the way in which markets clear, over how tiny perturbations in prices in one part of the world are immediately communicated to all other parts of the world. And it is very interesting to look at these things, but I do suspect that much of the financial sector that we have in Britain and America is an outcome of this wholesale corporatization of society. I do not believe that in a free market society there would be such a large financial sector. Much of it exists because if you want to earn a decent return on your savings, you have to commit them into the hands of coke-fueled gamblers. And the whole casino then tends to take over the country.
And I guess also, of course, you have, well, government bonds wouldn't exist.
Oh, yes, indeed. Of course, once we get onto the subject of the central banking scam, we could talk all night. But what I'm interested in at the moment is to explain how the financial system has been artificially enlarged and how it works very often to the detriment of poorer people in society. And that brings me back again to the claim that there is a corporate ruling class, which is both political and economic, which has increasingly, over the past 30 years, and it was always there in the past, but it's grown more notable in the past generation, which has enriched itself in a thoroughly parasitic fashion at the expense of everybody else. At the same time, I would again admit that even the most apparently parasitic corporations do produce a large amount of wealth. If I had to choose between the system as it is, if I had to choose between actually existing capitalism and any variety of state socialism or any variety of an Islamic economic order, I know which I would pick without a second thought. But, you see, it is not libertarian. And we should not defend the institutions and practices of actually existing capitalism as if they were the outcome of a libertarian free market.
Do you have a way to distinguish between which corporations you think are more closely aligned to the state versus those who are not, or those who are more would exist on a free market? I'm just thinking, for example, companies whose revenue seems almost entirely dependent on government. So, you know, various corporations that are in the military-industrial complex, for example.
Yes, well, of course, there's the military-industrial complex. Companies like British Aerospace might well not exist in a free market society. But, I mean, you have all these strange hybrids, and most of them are hybrids. There is in this country the Virgin Group of companies controlled by Richard Branson. Now, a lot of the wealth generated by the Virgin Group of companies is thoroughly market-based. His record chops, no, he's sold those off now, his internet service, his television service and so on, they do seem to be, of course, he has to comply with various regulations, he has to buy licenses, but they do seem broadly market-based. His railway franchises, no, there seems to be a great deal of political cronyism going on there in the background, mostly in his favour until recently, more lately against him. But, you know, I do come back to Tesco, the biggest supermarket chain in this country and one of the biggest in the world. Tesco is a wonderful institution. It's open 24 hours a day. It provides very high quality food at thoroughly affordable prices. I do like shopping in Tesco's and in Sainsbury's as well. But, you know, to what extent would these giant supermarket chains exist without the taxpayer to hand over endless subsidies in the form of road building and other infrastructure projects? I don't know. And so there is no easy answer. If I were a Marxist and you said, can you show me a member of the ruling class, I would point to anyone who looked as if he was an owner of the means of production. As a libertarian, if you ask me to identify a member of the corporate elite or the ruling class, no, it depends on circumstances, and it's very difficult to say that something is 100% either way. It is all a dirty mix of thoroughly admirable enterprise and of political cronyism.
Well, this has been a really interesting discussion, so I want to thank you, Sean, for being with us today. This is Luke McGrath and Radio Free Market. Please visit us on the web at radiofreemarket.com, where you can subscribe for free to all of our shows on iTunes, or visit the Radio Free Market archives for easy downloads. Until next week, wherever you are, please stand up for freedom. Thanks for listening.